Well, I want to thank the organizers, first of all, for inviting me to be a part of the conference. I remember as a mixed animal practitioner in South Dakota, getting along in practice and kind of getting overwhelmed with some of the synchronization programs and all the different things that were coming out on the repro side. And lo and behold, 2002, there was a conference that came up, and it was the very first version of one of these conferences. So I remember driving to Manhattan, Kansas, and it was just a wealth of information that really helped me help my clients understand the best ways to go about reproduction in their herds. And since then, I've been lucky enough to be involved with a couple of these conferences as well. And they just continue to impress me at the quality and the usefulness of the information that you get out of the information and the presenters. So great to be involved with this. I am going to hone in on some of the things that Dr. Dolman talked about. We're here to talk about infectious reproductive diseases, and there's a list that Dr. Dolman's already hinted at. We have viral infections that can cause problems. We have protozoal infections and bacterial infections that Dr. Dolman hit upon. And just like he mentioned, pregnancy loss and fetal infections are a real issue with most of those germs that we talk about. And I'm going to hone in on just a couple of them, even in a little bit more detail, particularly BVD virus, and probably more so IBR virus. And in addition to fetal infections and reproductive losses in cattle, we can also see that those viruses will have the ability to infect the ovary and cause some disruptions to the estrous cycle. So we know that these viruses might not have the dramatic effect that Dr. Dolman was mentioning in his abortion talk, but we could have some more subtle problems when it comes to reproductive cycle. And as I always try to tell my producers and veterinarians when I talk about these issues is there's no one-stop shop for preventing all of these problems. We have to think about biosecurity. We have to think about maintaining our environment, which was mentioned, keeping the coyotes away. And then vaccination becomes a part of prevention as well. And so that's what I'm going to kind of hone in on a little bit more is the vaccination part of this. So when we come to viral infections, we have many different products that are available for vaccines. Last count, I went through the compendium and actually came up with about 15 modified live versions and about 15 different killed versions that include IBR, BVD, usually they're in combination with some other viruses as well as Vibrio and Lepto. All of those products have on their label that they should be given no sooner than 30 days prior to breeding. And so we have the two versions. We have modified live vaccines. And I'll just kind of give you my take on the dogma surrounding modified live vaccines, some of the things that we as veterinarians have kind of taken to gospel over the years and things that I kind of perpetuate when I talk to my students at SDSU, that modified live vaccines, just because of the way they work, do a very good job of stimulating what's called cell-mediated immunity, killing virally infected cells, for example, killing abnormal cells. So that's where it really shines, that type of vaccine really shines in that regard. Because they're live and they perpetuate themselves in the animal, the booster requirements are a lot more flexible. We can get longer duration out of one shot. We don't have to booster as often. That's kind of what we feel in general about the modified live vaccines. But because they're live, we have to keep them alive. And from the time we buy the vaccine to the time it gets to be in the animal. And killing a modified live vaccine by keeping it on the dashboard of your pickup in July doesn't mean you've just created a killed version of that vaccine, because there's so little of that antigen in a dose of modified live vaccine compared to a killed vaccine. You're just basically created water then if you killed that modified live vaccine. So the handling requirements are very strict. And then there's the safety thing that's in the back of our minds too, because we're actually injecting a version of that live pathogen into the animal. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts boiling modified live vaccines down. On the other hand, killed vaccines, tend to have better antibody responses. So the way they work, they do a little bit better job of stimulating antibody production, which is important for those free living cells that kind of are out there in the body tissues and body fluids. So they can do a good job of producing antibodies. Because they are killed vaccines, they need more frequent boosters. And of course, they're considered safer because we aren't injecting a live vaccine or live virus into those animals. And I put these points up on the slide as if they're black and white. But in reality, these vaccines do, a modified live will still stimulate antibody production. A killed vaccine will still stimulate some cell-mediated immune protection as well. But you talk to veterinarians and even the vaccine companies, even the companies that sell these products, the dogma in their mind is that the killed vaccines don't do as good a job against the viral infections as the modified live versions do. And so that's what we kind of are faced with. Modified live vaccines have really taken, have really gotten the market share. In fact, when I was in practice, this is pretty much all we use is modified live vaccines. And they continue to be a good tool for protecting against a lot of viral infections in our cattle populations today. So I want to go through a little bit of a literature review and talk about what actually happens when we inject these modified live vaccines, specifically IBR. I guess we're going to hone in on a little bit more, although the proceedings do mention some information about BVD. IBR injected into, first of all, let's start with a heifer that's never seen any IBR, never seen a vaccine, never seen a wild infection. They're hard to find, but let's start with that heifer. What happens when we put IBR into those animals? So if we do that in this one, in this study, and these are all the references are in your proceedings, so I won't go into them in a lot of detail. You inject live IBR into heifers a day after estrus, you're going to get some what we call necrosis or dying off of the ovarian tissue in a good chunk of those animals. There's another study that use vaccine. The first study was actually injecting the virus into those animals. This was using vaccine. And of course, we had the CL and ovarian necrosis in a high percentage of those animals as well. And again, these are animals that are just, this is the first time they've seen this. So, it kind of is a no-brainer that their systems are going to be affected by this vaccine. There's one, 18 heifers, day four after the second luteolide shot in a synchronization program. That same CL and ovarian necrosis in a high percentage of them. There's one where they had vaccines and given, notice too, they're giving them IV. Not many people will give IV vaccines, so they're trying to get a response in these naive heifers. And when they compared them to a control, the vaccinated heifers, naive heifers again, had a lot lower calving rate than the ones who just got the controls. So, taken, and here's some more. Day 14 after breeding, this one particular, okay, we're not messing up just the estrus cycle here, but now we've gotten the animal bred, supposedly, and now we're seeing some problems with the actual embryo, with the actual conceptus here, and that the virus is attacking. Again, in naive heifers. And this is one that was more recent here where we did 59 heifers on day one of a co-sync program. We saw a lot of abnormal, we saw many more abnormal cycles in modified live vaccinated naive heifers again and calving rates compared to killed vaccines. So what we're seeing here is not just that the IBR virus is affecting the ovary on that cycle. We're seeing that even the oocytes that are being recruited for the next follicular wave are being infected as well. So this can have some longer term effects just beyond that first, that one estrus cycle. So taken all in all, okay, what's the take home point here too? And you guys know this already, right? If you have a naive heifer, has never seen IBR vaccine, don't give her IBR vaccine, at breeding time especially, or synchronization, because we're going to mess some things up. So that's what all those things take into account is that naive heifer. So that brings back the point of proper preconditioning, making sure that the heifers that we have to start work with around breeding time have seen the vaccine before and have been well vaccinated and in a good program preconditioning wise and as yearlings as well. So, okay, we know what it does in naive heifers. Like I said, not many naive heifers out there, right? So what happens with IBR vaccine, modified live vaccine, in well-vaccinated animals? Well, quite the opposite. You know, when we have well-vaccinated animals, you go through the studies, and you'll see that, you know, they give vaccine to well-vaccinated animals at estrus, and you don't find any virus in the ovaries. Everything seems to work out fine. We have modified live in a larger group of heifers, either 30 days pre-breeding, like the label says, or 9 days pre-breeding, and they didn't see any differences in pregnancy rates or cycling. So these are all well-vaccinated animals that are getting the vaccine, and we're not really seeing much of a problem. So here's one in 457 cows, either 10 days or 30 days pre-breeding, and they did find, this is a sign of things to come here, but 10-day pre-breeding group closer to estrus, they did notice a little bit more embryonic death rate in those animals. But otherwise, there really wasn't any reproductive differences. And there's another one in larger group of heifers that really didn't show any differences in conception rates. So why are we asking these questions? Why are we doing this this whole 30 days versus 10 days? And you guys kind of guessed that probably already, is that okay, we know that proper vaccination of a previously vaccinated animal probably isn't going to cause too much problems. But then the question comes is, can we cheat up on that a little bit to make it more convenient to give that vaccine, say, when we put the cedar in or when we give her the first luteolites? So that's what these studies were trying to answer. Can we mess around with that interval before breeding? So that's what the question was being asked then, and this is the point at which the last time I talked at one of these conferences was, I was asked to talk on that very subject. You know, what's the effect of modified live vaccines or vaccination programs around synchronization programs? You know, I look at this and my thing, you can go back in the old proceedings and you see that I said, hey, you know, you can cheat up and you can, you know, there isn't any evidence to say that you couldn't get by just fine with moving that vaccine up closer to breeding if your animals, and that's a big if the animals are properly vaccinated to start with. So that's where I was at, and that's where kind of the science was back, you know, several years ago. And the other thing that I wanted to mention about these studies here is the way they were done is we're just comparing different vaccine timing schedules, right? We're not seeing what the effect of one vaccine versus another is. So we didn't have any unvaccinated controls. We're just comparing timings on these vaccines, on these vaccine programs. So since then, the questions have come up. Are there more subtle effects that we're not seeing with modified live vaccines that maybe aren't as dramatic as what we see in naive animals? So here's some studies where we're talking about well-vaccinated animals again, but they've also included some controls in here. And so this is a study that used modified live IBR vaccine or a control group, which was just the killed Vibrio lepto, the 60 heifers, 30 or 10 days prior to breeding. Really didn't see much of an issue with the vaccine timing, but look at what they saw with the differences in calving rate between modified live pre-breeding and killed vaccines pre-breeding. So the modified live vaccinates had 78% calving rate, while we had 95% calving rate in the killed vaccines. So you look at this study and you think, well, maybe there's something going on, but there wasn't any statistical significance. Wasn't enough numbers to get that p-value and that holy grail number of 0.05, right? So maybe something going on there and maybe not. And then there's another study that looked at modified live or killed IBR vaccines to a pretty good number of dairy cows that had previously been vaccinated with four doses of modified live. So these are very well vaccinated animals. After they had their first calf, this is 45 days prior to breeding, and they really didn't see any differences in conception rates between modified live and killed vaccines, but they did notice that no matter what vaccine they gave, the animals didn't respond very well. They didn't have a very good antibody response, so there wasn't really a good vaccine response at all in that particular group. So, you know, this study here and some unpublished things made some people wonder if there's some more subtle effects that may be present from using modified live vaccines pre-breeding on animals. And so that's what brought up this study here. And this is a study which was a collaboration between South Dakota State and North Dakota State to study the effect of vaccination on reproduction in well-vaccinated animals. So these were our university herds that had been vaccinated before breeding every year with modified live vaccines, well-vaccinated animals. If they were heifers, they've been preconditioned with several different doses of modified live vaccines. So we've got a set of real-world, you know, our university herds are really managed in a real-world situation. They are and they're well vaccinated. And what we wanted to get at here was to have a study where we had the numbers enough, because we're not expecting to see a disaster here, right? We want to pick up a little subtle difference. I mean, we've been talking about this whole conference, you know, how can we get from, you know, how can we get a 2%, 3%, 5% increase in pregnancy rates and that kind of thing. And so that's where we're really after. We know these things aren't really causing a dire effect. So we started out with 1,400 some cows, nine herds over 2 years, and they were all blocked by age and their previous calving date and randomly assigned to three different groups. And again, I said all females were previously vaccinated. We ended up with 1,300 animals, just over 1,300 animals, because some of them got sold because for non-reproductive reasons, they were too ornery or they came up lame or something like that. So we ended up with 1,300 animals. So the study design was such that we had three groups, modified live group, and that's a mistake on the slide. We didn't include Vibrio as modified live viruses plus lepto, and we had the same antigens in a killed vaccine. And then we had saline, just salt water, that we injected into another group. And so we use this according to labor directions. We weren't going to ask that question about how far can you cheat up next to breeding for giving vaccines. So this was all done according to label directions. And this is a 7-day co-sync with CEDAR program. And you see the schematics here. These are the actual vaccines that we used. The BovaShield Gold FP5, VirusShield 6, and then good old saline. And everything from here on out is the same in all of those animals except for the vaccinations, which were done according to the label again. And a little bit about statistics. One thing I want to note, and I'll get to later, is that within herds, there can be a lot of variation. And even though we manage these herds in a very similar fashion, there can be herd-to-herd variation. Herd was included as a random variable in this study, so that kind of takes out all that little herd-to-herd noise or variation in what we're going to end up seeing with the statistics. And so we looked at things like the AI conception rate, AI pregnancy rate, 56-day pregnancy success after the cleanup bulls are turned in, breeding season total pregnancy success, and then we also looked at the calving distribution. When did these cows have their calves? So to look at some of the data here, so start out with the whole breeding season, and we did see a significant difference between two of the groups. You'll notice that one of the group had significantly higher pregnancy rate over the breeding season than one of the other groups, and the other one was in the middle. Well, which one of those groups were which? It was the modified live vaccine that had the lowest pregnancy success over time, and the killed vaccine group had the highest level of pregnancy success. And so here we have enough numbers here to tease out some of those really small differences, and we saw that there is a significant difference between these and these. You notice there's a group in the middle that was intermediate, and that was the saline control group. And so what you'll also see, and I'll get to this later, is that the modified live wasn't any different statistically than the control, and the killed wasn't any different than the control. But, you know, comparing both of the groups, there was some significance there. So that's the overall breeding season, but it gets more interesting because you get into the AI conception rate. The difference is even more profound, although not as statistically significant. We got to a 0.055 level of significance on the AI conception rate, and there was some difference between the modified live and the killed and control on 56 days conception rate, and that was statistically significant. So how many times have we heard at this conference already how important it is to get those cows bred early, you know, and moving that up a certain number of percentage points? Could this be something that could be affecting that? I guess we'll have to see. And this is actually what I'm talking about here, the calving dates. So the calving, this is the day of the calving season, and the three groups here again. The cows that calved in the first 12 days of the calving season approached significance here, numerically different between killed vaccine group and the modified live, with the killed vaccine having a greater proportion of those animals actually calving earlier in the calving season. So again, getting heifers and cows to calve early in the season, we've seen several times over how that has an effect on long-term sustainability of our operations. So in summary, this is kind of in words what I already pointed out. AI conception rates, numerically better in killed vaccine cows compared to modified live cows. 56-day conception rates was statistically better in the modified live, in the killed virus group and the saline cows versus the modified live cows. Breeding season pregnancy success was statistically better in the killed vaccine cows versus the modified live cows. And the proportion calving by day 30 was numerically better in the killed vaccine cows versus the modified live cows as well. So some interesting things. I didn't mention that. You know, when they first came to me with this study idea, I said, fine, you know, let's do it, but we're not going to see any differences, because I had reviewed the literature about, you know, well-vaccinated animals, and I really didn't feel that there was going to be any difference. But so these results were a little bit surprising to see. So this is another chart that I put up for discussion's sake here. And what we have is each one of those nine herds over their study. And here's the number of animals that were included in each one. And so what I have here is the different conception rate stages here. If you would just look at that stage, which one of the groups would be the winner, okay, so to speak. Now, statisticians would strangle me for putting this up here, because I'm not saying anything about how much difference there was, you know, with saline versus killed in that particular time frame. But what I want to point out, the fact is that there are herd-to-herd differences in this thing. And I've heard the comment when I've had discussions about this with people is that, by gosh, we've been using modified lives, you know, by the label, pre-breeding, never saw any problems. And that's fine. I believe you, and I believe there's no problems. But my other question is, how would you know? You know, how would you know if you're not including another group to compare to? And what else is within your herd that would make that make those differences larger or greater? So you'll see that within herds there were some that had, you know, the killed virus vaccine was kind of, you know, across the board was kind of the winner. So you might see some differences in your own herd depending on those situations. Heck, you might be one of these herds like this that you just vaccinate your animals with saline and you're better off, right? I don't think we're going to see those herds in any vaccine company ads anytime quick. But I want to bring up the fact that you know, there can be some significant differences between herds, within herds. But with this study, we had enough numbers overall to tease out that overall effect. And that's what we're really going after. So here's the slide where I'm supposed to tell you what you're supposed to think about things with this study. You know, if you're from a vaccine manufacturer point of view, you're going to look at that fact that, hey, my modified live vaccine did the same as control. Or, hey, my killed vaccine did the same as control. So we didn't have any detriment by using, you know, my vaccine. And that's a valid way to look at that data, right? Because there wasn't any difference when you just tease out the comparison between the control and the different vaccines. But from my producer standpoint and veterinarian standpoint, you know, there's something there. And I'm not sure we're in a position to understand exactly what's going on there. I think the fact that modified live vaccines can affect ovaries and have some effect on the estrous cycle has something to probably do with that. But we did see that there were some numerical advantages to for killed virus vaccines versus modified live vaccines. And especially that information to me about early conception rates and early calving, I think because that's such a crucial issue in our cow herds, that was really an interesting point to me too. Here's the other thing here. We didn't have any reproductive disease challenge in this, right? These were normal cows out there grazing. We didn't have a BVD persistently infected animal come in, or we didn't have a wild strain of IBR come in here either. Would they be a lot different if we would have had that? Guess we'll never know. But in my eyes, you know, even though we talk about, like Dr. Dolman said, the potential for abortion storms and abortion issues, you know, in from my standpoint, in you know, 26 years of being a vet and 11 years of being at SDSU, you know, those instances aren't all that common compared to, you know, the everyday things we do to those cattle. And I guess I'll get that later. So in conclusion, to wrap up this whole program here, is that we know that modified live vaccines have the potential to adversely affect reproduction, especially when you look at naive animals and in some of the work that we did on this larger scale as well. I'm not even going to talk about, but using modified live vaccines in pregnant animals, which is a bad idea in my view, but that's a whole other issue. I believe proper preconditioning of heifers and pre-vaccination really helps mitigate any potential problems, any potential big problems there might be. So getting the vaccine, IBR vaccine, BVD vaccine, into animals, you know, at preconditioning, at weaning, maybe again at selection of those heifers to enter the herd is going to be really important, I feel, and can't be overstated. And I think, you know, we are starting to see that there is something there with this issue of using modified live vaccines. And we have finally, you know, big enough numbers to maybe start teasing out some of those little differences. Again, responses might be very different within your herds. And we need to balance and think about what our disease prevention needs are compared to what the detriment might be of using a certain vaccine one over the other. And I really like Dr. Dolman's slide about the different levels of herds. You got the open herds versus the closed herds. And this is why there isn't and there shouldn't be one-size-fits-all vaccine program for every one of you, because you have differences in how many animals move back and forth. What's your risk? If you're a closed herd, your risk is a lot lower than somebody who's always buying and selling animals and coming in and out of the herd. I do think biosecurity is something that we, as beef people, kind of gloss over sometimes. Sometimes we think biosecurity is just for hog people, you know. After all, we don't have to have people shower in, shower out to our pastures, you know, to look at calves. We don't have to worry about the feed truck bringing pathogens in like they do in the swine industry or the poultry industry. But in the beef industry, biosecurity comes down to knowing what your animals are bringing in, whether that's that new bull or that group of heifers. Are you going to bring a persistently infected animal in? Are you going to bring somebody with a new strain of some pathogen like IBR that you didn't have before? Animal management, new animal management, is what biosecurity means to beef herds, and we don't do a very good job with it sometimes. And so that's going to help mitigate any of these potential problems as well. And so what we're talking about here is balancing that need for disease prevention with any possible effects, adverse effects of one vaccine over the other. And I feel strongly that this is something that needs to be talked about with your veterinarian on a herd-by-herd basis. You know, what's their experiences? What did they think? They have the access to all the different knowledge about all the different products, the company reps, so on and so forth. They're going to be in the best position to help you decide whether you need to make a change. So I don't want anybody to take a look at this stuff and say, I'm going to make my change right away next year pre-breeding, and don't tell your vet. You know, use them, include them in the conversation, because anytime you make a change with a vaccine program, there could be some consequences that you're not aware of that they can help you work through. So, again, I don't know, you know, exactly. There's a lot we don't understand about the mechanisms behind this, but I feel good that we've at least got some projects and some numbers together that can kind of make us take a better look at some of these vaccine issues. You know, timing issues close to breeding? Is it differences in products? You know, those are some of the things that we still need to have answers to questions, and some of the things we're going to continue to work on. So with that, I want to thank the collaborators on the NDSU-SDSU study. Some of you are in the room. Dr. Perry has been very helpful to me, and he's been a great colleague, and helps me get out from behind the desk once in a while and do real work like vaccinate animals and do surgeries and stuff like that. So I really appreciate that, along with Zoetis Animal Health for funding the project. So if there's time for questions, I'll try to answer some.